Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Three very impressive race performances, one glorious victory, and leadership for the first time in his career for Alex Lowes of the World Superbike Championship. Yes, the Phillip Island winner is with us on this week's Full Throttle, as well as his crew chief, Marcel Dwinker. All of that coming up in today's Full Throttle podcast from Eurosport. I'm Greg Haynes, and this is Monday, the 23rd of March, 2020. So, Alex, congratulations, first of all, from all of us at Eurosport. Alex Lowes, World Championship leader. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it certainly sounds good. Obviously, we've only done one race. It'd be sound a lot better if it's later in the year, but it was a great start for my time in green, and I really enjoyed that first weekend down in Australia.
Now, just before we get into the interview proper, I've got to ask you this, because I've been thinking about it while I was getting ready for the interview. You and Sam are identical brothers, obviously.
Yeah.
Have you ever pretended to be one another and taken advantage of certain scenarios?
Not anything too extreme. I went to Qatar after Australia, and he was struggling to ride with his shoulder. I was trying to convince him to let me do a few laps on the Moto 2 bike, but he didn't let me, so that's a shame.
Yeah, that must have been a bit weird, because you went to Qatar straight from Oz, didn't you? But obviously in the end had to come away without a race.
Yeah, we went there obviously to support the plan was to support my brother, and I played in the European Tour Pro-Am at the Qatar Golf Club, so that was quite good fun. And then we was meant to stay for the World Superbike race, obviously, but we just came back after the after the GP once it was postponed. But yeah, it was it's a shame, really. Qatar's always a great event, so it's a shame that happened. But obviously more important issues that, you know, we've got going on at the minute.
Yeah, obviously you and I don't really know exactly what's going on, do we? But what's your take on the whole situation? How has it affected you? How are you feeling about the whole scenario?
Yeah, I try not to have too much of an opinion on it, to be honest. I don't know anything about the science of it all. Just try to listen to the people that do know, and listen to advice. I've got a gym and everything at home, so I've just been spending time at home, spending time with Kareem, my wife. So she'll be fed up with me soon, which could be dangerous. But apart from that, I'm just trying to be positive and waiting for some news. And once we know, you know, clearly it's going to be a little bit of a delay, but once we know what's happening, make sure I'm ready to start the season again.
I was having a chat with Corinne on the build-up to the race weekend, and she was saying, you know, she always gets quite nervous, but it was great to see her and Marcel in the pit lane celebrating after you crossed the line. It was a great TV moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was strange. It was a little bit of a strange weekend. Obviously, I spent so long with the Crescent Racing team on the Suzuki and then with the Yamaha. So it was, you know, I was really close to all them, still am close to them guys. So to have the first race weekend, you know, testing's one thing, but to have the first race weekend together with all the new mechanics, new team, you know, everything always works a little bit different. And even something silly that you don't always think of, like, you know, the people you speak to on the grid, the plan you go through before the race, it's all a little bit different. So there was lots of unknowns from that side before the weekend. So to come away with a good result for all of us in the start of this new challenge was fantastic, and obviously a little bit emotional because it's always nice to start in a good way.
Have you got close at any point yet, Alex, to putting into the Yamaha garage and testing or over the Phillip Island weekend?
No, I've had lots of jokes with the mechanics, but once I was past the test, I was really, every time at the first couple of tests in Aragon and Jerez, I was thinking, Don't turn into Yamaha. But yeah, now I'm fully Team Green now, and it's normal. It seems like I've been there longer than a few months.
It feels like that from the outside, actually. You could just tell from your interviews on the TV and the way everything is. It almost seems like you've been there for years already, doesn't it?
Yeah, the team have been fantastic. You know, there's so much that goes on away from the racetrack that we don't always see, and you guys don't always see. But it's been, I've spent a lot of time in Barcelona over the winter, not just for the riding and off-road riding and getting prepared for the season, but also to try and work on the human side and the mechanics and building them relationships, which for me personally are really, really important. So it's been great. They've been fantastic, welcomed me really well into the team. And it's been, I've been learning lots as well, which is also great. So yeah, it's going really well. Obviously it's easy to say that after a really successful first round, but in general with the team, I'm feeling great and really enjoying it.
Just going back to Yamaha, actually, I was talking not too long ago with Herbie Blash, and Herbie was saying what a great guy you are, and that you worked very closely and got on really well, and that you got him a nice signed frame picture, I think it was, when you left the team. And he said he really feels you've moved on as a person and a rider. And that's nice, isn't it? Coming from someone as experienced as Herbie.
Yeah, Herbie's he's a legend, and he had some good advice for me over my time at Yamaha. You know, from he's worked with a lot of people, a lot of different teams, obviously in the car world, but in business, in the Formula One, and in bikes, and you know, people like that. There's always something to be learned from them. But on top of that, he's just a great guy that I got on with really well. So yeah, miss them guys. Obviously, he's still around the paddock. You know how close the paddock is, so I'll still be catching up with them most weekends.
So let's go right back, Alex. When was the earliest you thought, oh, this could be possible here, a move to Kawasaki? Or did you contact them? Did they contact you? When was the earliest moment you can remember some sort of inclination that there could be a chance?
Really early, actually. Sort of after, maybe sort of in July, start of August last year, there was sort of some talk about some contact from Kawasaki about what we was doing next year. I think obviously Top Rack moving, or he indicated to them that he was going to be leaving. I think obviously helped me. I guess their original plan would have been to move Top Rack into the main team. I don't really know, obviously, but and I was obviously doing okay at Yamaha, but I'd been there a long time, and obviously I was sort of not ready for a change because I was sort of committed to the project there. But if you did have to change, you know, if you could choose a team to go to, it would be the KRT guys, and if you could choose a teammate, it would have been Jonathan. So it was a pretty ideal scenario for me when Hodgie asked me about it initially. Obviously, you've always got the concern that you're jumping into being teammates with Johnny Ray, who's dominated more or less, if you say on average, over the last 5 years. So there's always a little bit of, you know, from the outside, you might think, oh, it's not all about Johnny, but you could think that. And rightly so with what he's done. So I was a little bit, I had to think about that a little bit. But, you know, if I've always dreamed about being on the same bike as him and trying to work out if how good you really are or aren't, or if I can improve and challenge him, is one of the big sort of motivation factors for me. So when I sort of knew it was available, I tried to grab the opportunity and do everything we can to make it happen. But it was quite long after that it was all sorted out.
And Jonathan is, as you say, he's such a pro, isn't he? The way he goes about every single aspect of the business, whether it's the riding, the media stuff, he just seems to have every single thing down to a T, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I like Johnny. I've always had, obviously always had good respect for him as a rider and what he does on track. You can't question any of that side of his performance and how hard he works with the guys, and you know, the guys he's got around him, how close he is with them. That takes a lot of effort. So I've got a lot of respect for that. And yeah, he tries really hard with the media, or not doing the right thing. But he's a good bloke, and sometimes I think he worries a bit too much about doing the right thing. He's there dominating races every weekend. And for me, he can do what he wants, but if a little bit of that attitude, he might ease him up a little bit. But you know, he's in the unfortunate situation where he's the guy that we're all trying to beat. And I think that he keeps raising the level, so I'm thankful for him for you know, all these guys that are coming into Superbike, they're all obviously aiming at trying to beat Jonathan, and I think that is what we're now seeing is taking World Superbike to another level. So it's good, yeah. And he's a great guy, good bloke.
Yeah, that is the thing, I guess, isn't it? When you've been so successful, you get this target on your back, don't you, from everyone. But
yeah.
I remember when I came into the paddock in 2015, Jonathan was the one guy who stood out for me as the one who really seemed to care the most about the championship itself. Obviously, he's looking after himself, as everybody is. But he really does care about the paddock and the promotion the championship itself gets, and he's looking at the bigger picture all the time.
Yeah, of course. You know, he's the number one guy, and he, I think he does feel a sense of responsibility to keep trying to push World Superbike, which is great. And as we all do as riders, you know, we want the best racing for the fans. And I wouldn't say I feel sorry for him. I don't feel sorry for him winning 5 world titles, but the way he's dominated some races, you can't knock him for making it boring. That's not, you know, it's up to us and me and all the other guys to try and catch him and try and make the racing better, which, you know, we're all trying to do. So sometimes when you do win so much, you can get a little bit of negative press, but I think he wears it all quite well, and I think he's a good ambassador for Superbike.
Yeah, and I think it does feel, I don't know how you feel, Alex, but it does feel like everyone else has stepped up a gear this year. I don't know whether it's responding to HRC, but it feels like Yamaha's put more investment in.
Yeah.
BMW are getting there. It just feels like the whole level stepped up a gear this year.
Yeah, it has. And you know, we have to be a bit careful. Phillip Island is always a track that that can produce close racing and certainly grouped at the front. You have to manage the tyre wear and stuff like that. But you know, it's exciting time for Superbike because there's a lot of good teams and a lot of fantastic riders. So I just hope that if the racing can be anything like that every weekend, I'll certainly have a smile on my face. And I'm looking forward to the European, a few more rounds to really see how it all pans out. But I'm pretty sure it's going to be one of the closest seasons, certainly that I've been involved in since I joined the championship.
Yeah, fingers crossed it will be. Hopefully we'll get another round sometime quite soon. Going back to last year, obviously you had the unfortunate incident, ironically, with Jonathan in Jerez. Mm. And in the end, of course, you ended up becoming teammates as a result of that, with your contract not being automatically renewed. But after that, once you'd got past Jerez and all the drama had died down, it must have been a bit of a difficult time for you, not knowing what was going to happen for the next season.
Yeah, maybe. The problem was that race I did in with Jonathan there in Jerez actually was one of my best races to the last corner, obviously, because Michael was a little bit faster than me, and he was a couple of seconds up the road, so I knew 5 or 6 laps to go that it was a battle for third, and I managed the race quite well. I did a good last lap, clean, quite faster than the laps before, so I took a lot of confidence from it. You know, there wasn't really space there for Johnny to try and pass me. He did, and unfortunately I crashed. And then I didn't deal with the Sunday very well. Jerez's always been a great track for me, one I really, really enjoy. And I felt like I had really good speed that weekend. So I was I overtried on Sunday and DNF twice. And that was sort of a good point for me, really, because I had a little look at myself, understood what I did wrong, and it made me a bit stronger for the second part of the season. Obviously, like you say, in my Yamaha contract, if I was in the top 3 in the championship, it was automatic renewal for this season. And after Jerez, I think I was forced by a couple of points or something, but it meant that it wasn't, which was quite good because obviously it's allowed me to make this step up with Kawasaki, which is, like I say, it's quite funny that it was essentially Johnny knocking me off that caused that. But after then...
It wasn't a secret plan, was it, between the two of you?
They might regret it if it was, but no. After that, I wouldn't say it was a difficult time. I give everything to my race, and I love it more than I ever had, and I feel like I'm riding the best I ever had. So I was just really focused on trying to beat Marky in the championship and get some good results for the end of the season. And then I was thinking, it's hard every year trying to sort of get a job for the year after or think about that, but I just tried to really focus on the races, do the best I could. And if I did a really good last part of the season and I didn't get a ride, then it's out of my control, but I could control the results, and I made sure I rode the best I could and ended up getting third, which meant quite a lot to me. Obviously, leaving Yamaha to get top 3 on sort of last year with them was quite rewarding, and good to beat Marky as well. I had a fantastic relationship with Van der Mark over the years we were there, and we got on really well, so we always ended up battling closely on track, and it was good times there.
Yeah, who do you consider as your closest friends in the paddock, Alex? Obviously, there's a few, but it does seem like you and Michael and then Corinne and Nadia, and you're always together. That seems like a really close, almost like a family-like bond there.
Yeah, honestly, I've got on with Michael really well. He's a fantastic guy. In Phillip Island, when I won the second race, I think he was fourth again, Mikey, and he came down to the podium.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
It means a lot, really. We've got great respect. We've done Suzuka together a few times, and we're very similar. We've got an ability to get on off the track and then smash into each other for 20 laps on it, trying to beat each other. And he's great to race against. He's aggressive, but he's class. He's very in control and don't always look it from the television. But he's in a battle. He's a fantastic rider to ride against, and we've had lots of great battles. So I would say from a purely riding side, I'm getting well with Michael. But in terms of friends away from racing, I'm obviously good friends with Leon Haslam. Been friends for a lot of years, and we will be when we start racing. So in terms of my closest friend, I'd have to say Leon. We train together, golf together, and him and the family have done a lot for me for a long time now, 15 years. So that's a bit more than... I'd class that friendship as a bit more than racing, outside racing, but in the paddock, I get on well with Michael.
So bearing that in mind then, and obviously like you say, Al, you've both been around racing and you've lived for long enough to understand this stuff, but it must have been a bit weird in a way then when you thought, hang on, there's a chance I could move into Kawasaki, but hold on a minute, that's my best friend's ride. How does that sort of work?
Yeah, it was awkward. And obviously, we've got a short career and we need to try and make the best decisions for our career every year. And I'd expect Leon, or even my brother, anyone to do the same if they have an opportunity. And we were speaking a lot in contact with each other about what was happening. So obviously, clearly, it's not an ideal situation. And I'm really happy how it's worked out with Leon getting the Honda ride. And I think he'll be fantastic for that project, especially if he's got so much experience and he gives everything, no matter if the bike's not quite right yet, or he'll still give everything. So I think he'll be fantastic for that project, and it's worked out well for us both. But it's always a little bit awkward when you're fighting for the same jobs.
I suppose it's tricky, isn't it? Because as you grow up as a kid and you want to be whatever it is in life, whether it's a fireman or whatever, as a childhood dream, let's just say a fireman as an example. There's quite a lot of firemen around, whereas there's only two Kawasaki World Superbike riders, aren't there? Yeah. So I suppose it's always going to happen to some extent at one point or another.
Yeah, it is. And like I say, all you can do is just be honest about it with each other, and hopefully in the end it doesn't come between the friendship. But, it's worked out well. I've got a dream of being a world champion, and I'm still getting up every day believing that. So I've got to make the right decisions for myself as well. But it's worked out well.
How do you feel you moved on, Alex? It's a bit like what Herbie was saying and other people have said, years ago you might have come into the garage annoyed and thrown stuff around and whatever. Now, I don't obviously work in the team, but it just feels, watching you and listening to you in interviews and all the rest of it, you seem to have just matured as a rider, as a person. You seem really, not that you were insecure before, but you feel so secure in yourself now.
Yeah, I feel it, to be honest. I feel the last... I had a really tough year with injuries in 2016, the first year of the Yamaha project. And they always say, you learn more from your bad years than your good years. And I think you do, really. You learn about yourself. You learn that you still love the game. And I've worked really hard on the mental side of the sport. I'm always, my default setting is to just give it everything and try hard. And it doesn't always happen just by trying harder. It's not what you need to do. You need to be smarter. You need to understand more about when to apply yourself, how to work with the team, how to work with the bike. And, I love the challenge of trying to improve myself every day, every year. And as it's turned out, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've been steadily improving. Obviously, I've still got a lot I can improve on. But I've got a better understanding of how I work, I suppose, which is experience. And what I need to do on the bike, and that's given me a lot more self-confidence, and that allows me to be a bit calmer.
I remember doing an interview once with Mario Andretti.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was an F1 world champion, Indy 500 winner, and he said, one of the nicest things I've ever heard said in an interview, he said, whenever I came home, it didn't matter whether I'd had a good day, a bad day, crashed the car, won the race, won the championship or whatever, I always got the same kiss.
Yeah.
Do you feel that's important as well, that love you get at home? It doesn't matter, regardless of what's happened on the track, you've always got that support back at home.
Yeah. And, my wife, Karine, fantastic. She's really, she we've got a fantastic life. And obviously at the minute, our life is slightly biased towards me trying to do the best I can in my sport. But when I start racing, we'll still have a fantastic life. And we're really lucky and privileged to do what we do. And we always remind ourselves of that. And she reminds me and vice versa. And that helps a lot. And it is important. It takes the pressure off, but if you can have that balance, it certainly helps, I think, with your racing. But I've also got a lot of other good people around me in the garage. You know, Rocky, Dave Ryan is my assistant, or whatever you want to call him, that comes and helps me. He's fantastic as well. He's calm and he understands it from a sporting side. So, you know, putting these good people around you certainly helps, and helps me, you know, appreciate and remember that I'm doing something that I only dreamed about doing when I was a kid, and there's not that many people that can say they're doing that. So it's always important to remember that.
And Corinne obviously works in the racing world as well with Monster. Yeah. Is that how you guys met? Was she already working with Monster when you met, or?
Yeah, I knew her from being around the paddock. I think she was already working with Monster. And I knew her a little bit before we started dating, as it was. But quite a while ago now. So it's still going strong, bless her. She's putting up with me for now, which is great.
Yeah, I got the feeling she's sitting there now listening to every word.
She's downstairs waiting for Neil Hodgson, the manager's coming over, and we've got some stuff to talk about, little bits and bobs, and just have a catch up really. So she's waiting for him to come over. But my brother's just moved back round the corner from he had a place in Isle of Man, who's living in Italy, so he's got a place back here now, so she's going to palm me off onto Sam a bit, so that's all right.
And how is Sam, by the way? Because he's obviously had a bit of a tricky start to the year, hasn't he, with his injuries?
Yeah, he's all right. You know, injuries are part of the game in our sport. He was a little bit unlucky, but he had a shoulder injury in Jerez testing. But he's okay. He's getting back to some good fitness now, and you know, like everyone else, just patiently waiting for when it all kicks off. But he's fine.
Just before we sign off, Alex, we'll have to talk about Marcel Dwinker, because we've got him on the show in a few minutes. How have you found it working with Marcel? It's been an interesting time for him, hasn't it? Because he's had Tom Sykes, Leon Haslam, now Alex Lowe, three riders in 3 years. Top guy, though.
Yeah. First thing, fantastic guy. Really, really nice guy. And from away from the job, fantastic. Got on with him really well from the first sort of meetings we had with him. In the garage, he's got so much experience and a lot of knowledge. And already, from the testing, he was helping me understand a bit more about the bike, and it's been great to work with. He's very methodical, very clever, and he's very precise with me, which I really like. But honestly, it's been, normally it takes a bit of time with a crew chief to adapt and to get the most from each other, but I've been lucky. I've worked with a lot of good guys over the years, and I've learned a lot how to deal with them, but Marcel's been fantastic, and I really believe he's going to help me unlock a bit more from myself as well, which is promising going into the rest of this season.
What's quite interesting is that Marcel, unlike people like Pete Jennings, Andrew Pitt, people you've worked with before, he's not actually an ex-rider himself, is he? His background is in suspension. Yeah. Do you find it's a bit of a different sort of relationship, the approach he has?
Yeah, obviously an ex-rider, you've always got the sport inside of it where they're still an ex-rider, so that the emotions are slightly different in the garage. And you have to channel them to make it a positive. Whereas with Marcel, there's a lot more during the sessions, I would say, there's a lot more of a calm approach in terms of he's looking at the technical side of it. He's always coming from that angle, which in our practice sessions, the job is to improve the bike, to give us the tools to do the best we can in the race. So, it's certainly a different dynamic. But like I said, I think it's going to allow me to work a little bit better in the garage. And as we saw in Phillip Island, everybody was slightly concerned, apart from me and Marcel, really, about the race pace that we had. We were quite confident. We hadn't done the fast laps in the tests and stuff, but we stuck to our game plan, which I was really proud about after the event. And luckily it paid off. Some questions saying, do we need to change more? Because we didn't look like we was too quick. But from Saturday, when we started using a lot more sort of fresh tyres and going for lap times, I was fast, and I was also fast at the end of races, which is what we've been working on. And a lot of that approach came from me and Marcel and how we managed the situation, which I was, you know, like I said, I was proud of how we did that.
And finally, Alex, what was it like there? Because there was a great chat between you and Jonathan going up the stairs to the podium, which we could hear on the TV. And he said, everyone was smashing into me. There was a lot of contact in that last race in particular, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was great. Now, honestly, yeah. I think that I love it when we got a battle. I've always enjoyed having good battles from when I first jumped up on a superbike in BSB. And, you know, if that's when I'm at my happiest. If you're in a battle, you're trying to beat the other guy, you're trying to be smart, and you know, people think that battling is about being aggressive and you know, diving up the inside and barging someone out of the way. And do you know what? Honestly, it's completely the opposite. The calmer you can be when you're battling, I think you're going to be in a better position. And that's something I've always tried to think about. And even before that race in Phillip Island, I was charging up and down the cabin and getting ready with Rocky, and I was saying, stay calm, because there's going to be people up the inside, there's going to be two or three abreast sometimes on the braking, and the calmer I could be would allow me to put myself and the bike in the correct position to be there at the end of the race, and also obviously look after the tyres, which is another thing that's important there. And I always think that I'm one of the calmest guys in the battle, and I think if you watch the race back on telly, it looked like that, so it's nice to have a bit of a game plan and see it sort of come off.
Yeah, and of course you had your reminder on your pit board, Old Bull, which confused Witt and I a bit at the time, but we've since had it explained to us quite well by Andrew Pitt. But if you could just explain to us in the nicest possible way, what's that all about to anyone who doesn't know Old Bull?
A funny story behind that Old Bull. I was, when I first ever rode a superbike, Team WFR Honda, I was, Glenn Richards was my teammate, who got on to be a good friend of mine, and we was testing at Donington, and I'd been going fast at the previous test and was doing the test and going to Spain for the last pre-season test. And I crashed after about four laps, big high side down Craner Curves, and cut all my leg. And I was in the medical centre, and Glenn, who was obviously my teammate at that time, he came to me and said, put his arm around me. He was having a little chat. And I thought it was a bit strange, obviously. I was a young guy and you don't normally get advice or help from your teammate. You just want to beat him. And he gave me the Old Bull story, which was along the lines of, you know, the young bull just wants to get everything done immediately, whereas the Old Bull is calm, takes his time, but in the end sort of he conquers it all. And it's a little bit more of a rude analogy than that.
I was going to say, it's a very, very good way of putting it.
Yeah, in a nutshell, it was, and I never really got it then. I was still just thinking, just want to go fast, just want to win, just want to do well. But now I use the Old Bull as just you know, to remind me that it's not about being fastest on that lap, or it's about being calm and being there at the end, which sort of worked really well at Phillip Island, but it's something I use to try and maximise performance all the time. So yeah, it's just something to remind me, really.
Yeah, but it definitely worked, didn't it? Championship leader, we don't know when the next round's going to be, but what's the plan now before whenever the next round is, whether it's Aragon, Misano, Donington, who knows? Anything happening? Golf? As long as you're not in lockdown, I guess.
Yeah, if I'm not in lockdown, I'll try and get out, get some fresh air, play some golf. Obviously, it's... you know, I think it's quite important that we all stick by the social distancing guidelines that have been set. And you know, on the golf course, obviously, it's easy to do that. But I'm staying away from public places. Like I said, I've got the gym and everything at home. So, you know, for me, honestly, it's I'm actually taking a steady couple of weeks, recharge the batteries, listen to obviously what's being said, and once we get a definite plan of when we start again, I'll keep my training up into gear and just make sure I'm fresh and ready to start the season in the best way that I can. So I'm just being positive about everything. It's the situation we've got is bigger than the motorbikes. It's important that we look after the health of our friends and family and come together at this time, not try to think that we're all victims and we want to be doing this and we want to be doing that. It's important for us to stay positive, and all I know is when the time's right and we're back racing, I'm going to make sure I'm ready to start where we left off at Phillip Island.
Yeah, well said, Alan. Congratulations on Phillip Island. It was brilliant, really brilliant for all of us to watch back at home. And good luck with the rest period, and good luck with the next round, whenever that might be.
Yeah, you too, mate. Look after yourself.
And here he is now. Marcel, some great words there from Alex about you. So now is your chance to praise your rider. What's it been like working with Alex so far?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for inviting me in the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, since the very first test in Spain, in Aragon, it's been a very nice experience. my group, our team, my group has been together since the end of 2011. We are still together after all these years. And we are lucky with Alex because he's a very nice guy. He fits very well in the group. We share the same interests and challenges. So far, very nice.
And as you say, you guys have been working together for 10 years, haven't you? Basically, with all of the mechanics on your side of the garage at Provec. That continuity must be very nice for you, Marcel, to already know everybody as friends, not just as colleagues.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure it's quite special in this environment to be together for all these years. We had some great ups and we had also some downs over all these years. We are still together and this shows that we are a very strong group. And the only thing I can say is that it's very special and lucky to have these guys around me.
So when Tom Sykes left at the end of 2018, that must have really felt like the end of a chapter for you, because of course you'd been championship runners up, you'd won the championship together. You could have won three titles. It was very close to being three, wasn't it? Not just one. So for that to end must have been quite a strange moment for you.
Yeah, also because on the end of 2011, when we moved to Provec and we formed a new team around Tom, we had an impressive progress in 2012, almost won the championship. And of course, we know 2013 and 14, we had a lot of wins and a lot of successes. And this was my first year as a crew chief. So I started as crew chief on the end of 11 with Tom. And after all these years with Tom, then because he left, sure, it was a bit of a strange situation. But on the end, you know, these things happen. To be together for 7 years in a row is already something special. So we only look positive with positive minds back to this period. And we moved on.
What's it like then, Marcel, working with Tom and then working with Leon Haslam and now with Alex? They're all quite different guys, top riders, all of them, of course, and all champions in their own right. But how different is Alex, for example, to Leon Haslam last year and to Tom the year before? Do you have to work quite differently to get the best out of each rider?
On the end, the process, you know, the formula we are using, we don't change this formula and this process. So, on the end, in all these years, you build a kind of a system which functions on the end with every kind of rider. Of course, there are different riders with different characters and different riding styles, but on the end, you don't change much of your process. What was quite outstanding and what I felt quite interesting is that when you change rider, sure, you get different kind of feedback, you have different kind of characters, and on the end, you learn quite a lot. So the switch from Tom to Leon and from Leon to Alex in these, two years, we've learned a lot. And in this moment, we are putting everything together to do well with Alex. And after Philip Arndt, I can only say that we reached our first target.
Well, I mean, it was a tremendous race weekend, wasn't it, for you guys for results and for us watching as well and commentating on it. After the test, of course, nobody was quite sure what was going to happen. And I thought, oh, it looks like Alex is struggling. But having just spoken with him, I realise now he was actually very confident all the way through, wasn't he? And you can never know quite for sure how it's going to be after the test. It seems like he was extremely confident as soon as you got to Australia.
Yeah, we had a very good winter test. We were very strong lap time wise and also over distance. So we did several time. We did long runs and we knew also on used tires the speed was in the window. Of course, moving to Phillip Island, your target moves from a winter test where there is no pressure and things are quite easy to the pre-test before the race weekend. And of course, your targets are completely different from that moment. What we targeted from the beginning was to do a lot of laps on every single set of tires, because we know that Phillip Island stresses the left side of the tire a lot. This track stresses the tires the most if we consider all the different racetracks during the season. So we knew what our target was. We needed to get the maximum performance and maximum potential from the rear tire. That's where we concentrated on from the very first first lap of the test. And on the end, the final standing of the test on Tuesday afternoon, many people thought, oh my God, they are yeah. not where they should be. But in the last hour, many riders, or almost all the riders, started to throw in new set of tires just to make, you know, an impressive lap time. But this was not our aim. Our aim was different. So once we finished the test, we had a lot of information over distance. We knew where we needed to improve for Friday. And every single session on Friday and Saturday, we were coming closer to the top guys. And we all know the result of race one.
Yeah, absolutely superb first round, wasn't it? The action. It was great. I thought that we got three different winners as well for the first time. That had obviously never happened before on one single weekend.
Yeah, it's been great.
Obviously, Marcel, it was tremendous, wasn't it? But we've said, obviously, haven't we, Phillip Island is never a true gauge of the season ahead. But do you feel as well, like Alex does, that this year will be more competitive, generally speaking, whenever the racing does continue?
Yeah, I'm sure all the riders will be closer together because there are many different manufacturers improve their machine, change machine, and the Kawasaki stays more or less the same. Of course, we are in a never-ending process of development, but I'm sure other manufacturers are slowly coming closer. So I expect things to be closer racing than what we've seen in the last years. And I must say, I can't wait to get back to the track.
Yeah, me neither. I don't know when it's going to be, but hopefully sooner rather than later. Now, Marcel, this next question is probably worth a podcast of its own, actually. But I'm just keen to know what you think about the evolution of the regulations over the last few years. It feels a little bit like it's not quite so open from a technical point of view, like you can't change quite so much anymore. Is that fair to say?
The regulations got more limited, but mainly on engine tuning. So for sure, we aren't allowed to change any gearbox ratios during the season. We run the same kind of, we need to run the homologated primary. So sure, we have some limitations also on performance part inside the engine. So the engine performance went down over the years a bit. But on the end, what we are trying to achieve on the track is getting the maximum performance out of our chassis and out of our tires. So from this point of view, our job did not change.
And what's the general feeling you think, in your opinion? Because I was asking Alex before whether it almost feels like, because HRC is in the paddock now and they're really investing heavily in superbikes again, it almost feels, well, not Kawasaki, because Kawasaki's been leading for the last few years anyway, but it almost feels like everybody else, in response to Honda, has had to up their game. I'm sure that's not the only reason, but is that fair to say, or is that just me inventing things?
Now, Ducati set the trend last year by bringing a bike which was only developed for World Superbike. So as we saw last year, especially in the first part of the season, they were far ahead, especially on engine performance compared to everybody else. And the combination of Bautista and Ducati was impressive. So they set a different target for every manufacturer. And of course, last year things changed after some rounds in our advantage. And on the end, Kawasaki won the championship again. But still, Ducati and Honda, they are raising the performance of superbikes in general, and everybody need to respond. And that's what I'm sure every manufacturer is working on, also Kawasaki. But we know our package; it's very, very well balanced. We saw many race wins and championship in the last 7 years. So we will continue working with the actual machine for 2020, but we are working hard for a model update in the near future.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting, perhaps, for next year, isn't it? Finally, Marcel, with all this coronavirus chaos going on at the moment, what does a world championship leading crew chief do when there's no races? More time with the wife and kids, I guess?
Yeah, that's right. That's we need to spend some time with the family, because I'm sure the second part of the year will be very busy. I hope we will get back to the track very soon, not because racing is life depending, but this means only that the virus is slowly moving away and people can pick up their normal life again. That's of course what's most important. And yeah, we'll wait and see. I pray every day that things will improve very soon, and I wish everybody all the best.
Yeah, maybe we're going to be racing at Christmas for the first time ever, Marcel.
Yes, that's possible.
Hopefully not, but you never know the way things
are. The most important is that we all stay positive and follow the guidelines we get.
Well, Marcel, thanks very much for your time and congratulations again on that wonderful start to the year.
Yeah, thank you very much, Greg.
Once again, I hope you've enjoyed the show. Please subscribe if you haven't already. And many thanks to those of you who continue to subscribe to the Full Throttle podcast. It is available on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on the Eurosport website, and many other podcast platforms as well. Check out the links on Twitter as well, Eurosport_UK. Well, we'll be back next week, Monday the 30th of March, with Mick Shanley, a former British Superbike title winner, of course, as a crew chief with Josh Brooks. And he's the current crew chief of Loris Baz in the World Superbike Championship. A very busy year indeed coming up for Mick. And he'll be talking us through all of the drama of Phillip Island and how he predicts the season might continue whenever the racing is fully back in action. That will be next Monday. But for now, from me, Greg, from also Marcel and Alex, many thanks for listening to Full Throttle. And we'll speak with you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the Full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the Full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.